Hey, everybody. This is the Alternative Cinema Podcast for June 2009. My name is Mike Rosso.
I'm John Fedeli.
And guess who's back?
Hey!
Ed Grant.
Nice to be here.
Welcome back again, Ed.
Thank you very much.
Well, how are you feeling, Mike? How are you doing? Everything's good?
Well, let me give a little overview as to what we're going to discuss
today.
Okay,
right.
We're going to have a regular section every podcast, which is called our mailbag. We're going to have our old news section, because by the time any news we have gets to
the listeners, it's
old
news.
For the first time on the show, but not a stranger to fans of alternative cinema,
yes,
is the Christian Rights Righteous Rants, which was a column,
right,
regular column in Alternative Cinema, the print magazine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's where it comes from. Okay.
Well, yeah.
Christian is making the transition to the digital age.
He's kind of your Ed Anger, I guess, then. He's kind of like
An
outraged soul crying
he,
out in the wilderness.
Yeah, he is your alter ego.
Now, this brings me to something that never ceases to grind my nerves.
Yes.
Actually, but it's not Mike, though. It isn't Mike.
I don't know, Mr. Blueberry.
Then we have our DVD releases.
Right.
In a month.
Right. Fun.
So now that I've gotten that out of the way of, like, what is on the podcast,
mm-hmm,
hopefully no one's tuned out. You know what I meant to mention last time, and I did briefly,
what?
But didn't, probably. I think I forgot. You may not know this, John, but do you know that Ed has a site called MediaFunhouse.com?
No, I did not.
Well, thank you. Yes, I got a blog spot, too. We've got a whole bunch of things connected to the show
and
I did in New York.
I checked it out. It's pretty good.
Thank you. Well, thank you very
much. What are you blogging about?
What did I blog about recently? Godard and an old song from the 70s, New Wave, like an old New Wave song. We kind of bounce around from different things, like TV to movies.
Very esoteric.
High art to low trash, yes. That's what I say on the show.
Great.
And I guess this fits in the high art category, the stuff I do here.
Definitely.
Bada-bing.
Your site really is high art to low trash.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm just not interested in the mainstream. We're only interested in the show on very, very high art and very low trash.
Nice.
The mainstream is boring.
And your
is.
Your blog is also a... What is that noise?
There's a phone ringing somewhere.
It's okay. Your blog is also a public access TV show in Manhattan?
Yes, Media Funhouse. That's how it started.
And how long has that been running?
That's been on since 1993. October of 1993 we've been on the air in New York. So we've been on for quite a while.
Is that you?
Yeah, it was me. I'm sorry.
Okay. What?
Nobody ever calls me. Just fucking figures they call me now.
What about Media Funhouse? Can you tell us a little bit about it, a little exciting, you know, what's it
Well,
about?
We do things from high art to low trash. On the program, I present archival footage from my own collection of oddities on DVD and VHS. I do celebrity interviews with notables, including yourself at one time. We have talked with many people on the program, from Peter Ustinov to Mike Rosso.
Wow.
And,
that really is high art to low trash.
Kind of, there you go. And definitely do DVD reviews, current day DVD reviews, and some theatricals, but mostly independent, foreign, mainstream.
Nothing is off target there.
Nothing, yes, except Tom Cruise and Tom Hanks, the main screen. The kind of
I have Googled, this is impossible, you don't Google on YouTube. See, Google has become such a part of our
search.
It's like Kleenex.
Kleenex. I searched on YouTube, and some of your clips just came up. For example, you have some interview with Uncle Floyd where he's walking in the closet.
In the toilet at the Bottom Line, the now-defunct Bottom Line downtown, yes.
Nice.
Big fan of Uncle Floyd.
That's not your clip. You have yourself and...
That's me in the... No, he is showing me the toilet at the Bottom Line.
Wow.
You have a clip of yourself, and you'll tell me who she is. Basically, the woman who is Ms. 45.
Zoe Tamerlis. I just put that up. Zoe Tamerlis, who's now the deceased Ms. Zoe Tamerlis. Yes, she worked with Abel Ferrara. She wrote Bad Lieutenant, too.
I saw her at Chiller in the late 90s.
That was the time. That was the time I interviewed her, 97.
I don't know the woman. She looked zonked.
Yeah. She was very nervous. I talk about this in the blog, so I'm not talking behind her back. She basically, her hands were shaking. She had bruises on her hands.
Whoa.
She was chain smoking and had a see-through top, which I didn't know until I started interviewing her. Which
older woman?
No, very, maybe late 30s, early 40s. She died somewhere by her early 40s. She was a beauty who kind of wasted herself away on heroin and then cocaine.
Yeah,
this is on her Wikipedia, so I'm not talking behind anything.
Shocking story, John.
Yeah,
shocking.
Terrible story. Terrible.
That never happens, John.
It never happens.
No.
Certainly not to seduction cinema star.
No.
No, never, never.
Never.
With alien life forms, ours is not to reason why. Ours is but to do or become permanently deactivated.
Did you have an interview with, who's the guy?
Soupy Sales. Soupy Sales. He was Metro Media. Yeah. I interviewed Soupy. Yeah.
You interviewed
Soupy.
He
was very nice when he was still really in some good health. His health has been failing the past few years.
I saw him a couple years ago at Chiller, and he looked like
he's not well.
You could break him.
So Ed Grant is actually, you're a remarkable, you're like the best kept secret resource.
Thank you.
For some amazing archival interviews.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'd like that. That phrase. This is true.
That is all really
available?
All
available on your website?
Well, I don't have the whole things, but I have clips up on YouTube and on MediaFunhouse.com.
There you go.
I tend to get people on their way up, like Wong Kar-wai, I got on his way up, and then I tend to get people, sadly enough, when they're in their later years. So I wouldn't say on the way down. They're just legends. Either they're legends or they haven't yet even been known. So,
have you been contacted by West Coast big shots who are doing documentaries who need clips from you?
One time a piece of the Wong Kar-wai was used in a Sundance Channel documentary, and that's the one time it's been used. So, oh, and also a Marco Ferreri box. There's a Marco Ferreri box. I interviewed the Italian filmmaker who made La Grande Bouffe. I'm the only person who's interviewed him at all in America, and that's on YouTube, and that was on a set that another company I will not mention has put out, initial KL. Actually, they distribute, I believe, your stuff, Koch Lorber. Entertainment, yes. Koch Lorber put out a box of Marco Ferreri that includes my little interview with Marco Ferreri back in 1980, God knows, 6 or 5.
Wow.
So a lot of these people are deceased now, sadly.
Mm. Yeah, people die.
Mail's in. Hey, whoa, mail's in, John.
There you go.
Mail call. What do we got? We received our first listener letter.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm happy to announce, and I think it's funny. I don't know if you guys think it's funny. We actually have an email address where people can send listener correspondence to us.
And that would be?
That would be customerservice@alternativecinema.com.
That's alternativecinema.com.
It sounds like you're sending it to the toilet or something.
Yeah.
Like something's
the
broken.
The closet.
Well, here's what happened. It's the catch-all. At the bottom of alternativecinema.com, there's a button that says contact us.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than starting our own email address, like something that would make sense, it makes actually more sense for people to send an email. Please do send us an email to customerservice@alternativecinema.com, because what happens, it goes to Justin in AC.
Yeah.
He's the manager of AC. And then he just forwards it right to me.
Mm.
But he catches everything in the morning.
Mm.
Otherwise,
he's a good filter. Otherwise, you would never get it and read it.
Why should you know, the whole fact of, you know, people having multiple email addresses, yada, yada. Yeah. Look, we're a little bit behind the times here to begin with.
Mm.
So we got a letter.
That's great.
So what does it say?
It's should I say his name? Is it cool?
Sure.
Yeah, it's from Douglas Waltz. And he writes, Mr. Rasso. He certainly doesn't know you that well. I have listened to both of the podcasts. Fascinating stuff. Some suggestions. First, you need to have a comment section for your podcast. What does that mean?
Well, we didn't exactly do that, but underneath, if you click on podcast on Alternative Cinema, there is now a button that says contact us.
Oh, really? And it'll send you to customer service?
Wow.
It'll get to me.
It'll get to you somehow.
So we sort of took his comments you know, to heart.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Thanks, Douglas.
What else?
He also says, people like to interact with their favorite podcast.
Okay.
You can interact with comments? See, I'm so behind the times. I don't
I
even
think
know
it's
what
like,
Douglas
you know how
about
on YouTube?
Oh, comments. Yeah, beneath
comment
the comments
section.
Oh, I see. So you can leave
so
a little.
So they could respond and say, you were full of shit, or I think you were terrific.
People
or,
can comment.
Where
yeah,
was
right.
Misty Monday? That
oh,
kind
that's
of thing.
Good.
Yeah.
That's cool. You and Fidelli make a great duo on the air. Aw.
That's very nice.
Thanks.
No mention of Ed.
Oh, well, I'm just a guest.
Well,
I'm just a guest.
Well, you're good, though. He says, really, that was it. Could you give me the name of John Fidelli's CD he put out? It's called Who Stole the Quiet Day by the Pink Delicates.
We promoted the CD on the first podcast, and the disc wasn't available on AC.com.
Right.
So what we were promoting wasn't even available. No. How stupid is that? Whose fault?
Not mine.
Mine.
Mm.
But it's now on the site.
So now, Douglas, you can go up there and get your hands on it and appreciate it.
Or you can go to Amazon. Interest. Or you can go to Amazon.com.
Or iTunes.
But why would you want to go there? You know, that iTunes business brings us right into our old news section.
Whoa, old news.
Why is it old news?
Because by the time you get it, it's old news.
That's right. And that select alternative cinema titles are now available on iTunes.
Great.
Do you know which ones, John? Do you have your laptop open?
Yes, I do. Let's see. Oh, well, we have Criminally Insane.
Yes.
Oh, Nick Phillips. Nice.
Yes.
And do you know
you're spreading Nick Phillips into the cyber age. That's amazing.
Absolutely. Do you know what this iTunes is?
Yes, yes. I have iTunes on
have
my
Have you
computer.
Heard about this
I
iTunes?
I do not pay for movies, unfortunately, but I do
right.
iTunes.
It's crazy. They have stuff. You download it from the air.
Yes.
Comes into your computer from nowhere.
You have a little promo for us on that there's Criminally Insane?
Oh, sure I do. And it goes like this.
In a few moments, two people will die.
I'm gonna have to kill you both.
No, Ethel!
Suspense that will shatter your nerves as Fat Ethel, with a maniac's cunning, terrorizes her numerous victim.
Do you think I'm gonna let you starve me?
Another kind of monster is loose. And death follows each time that Ethel reaches for the meat cleaver. Gluttonous Ethel, whose love of food in enormous amounts was equaled only by her immense joy in killing.
That's it,
wow. It just ends like that.
It's the lovely voice of Priscilla Alden. Is that actress's name? Crazy
yes.
Fat Ethel? Yeah, I love that movie. I would say Nick Phillips is God. I want to put that out on the... He is quite the low-budget filmmaker.
Mm. Priscilla Alden was. She passed away.
Oh, she did die.
She passed away maybe 2 years ago.
More.
Wow.
She's Crazy Fat Ethel.
Yeah.
And also played Death Nurse.
Yes, that's another series, right.
Was that Nick Phillips?
Yes.
Nick Phillips, yeah.
Wow.
And, she also narrates one of your sex movies. I think it was Paige who found out that like one of the slow, luxurious voices is Priscilla Alden.
She did some voiceover work on some of the Nick Phillips softcore sex movies.
Really? Which you guys have out, yeah.
Which we have out, yeah. I don't know which one.
I forgot which one she narrates, but she narrates and she's doing the longing prose on there.
I highly recommend that people who enjoy good, bad movies see Criminally Insane. I've heard people I know, like John Trackman, like, rave about it. Like,
really?
Just like, oh, my God. It's the best. Oh, my God.
Really?
Criminally Insane.
Wow.
And, of course, there's...
I praise that.
Criminally Insane 2.
Crazy Fat
just
Ethel 2.
Yeah.
I actually have friends who prefer Crazy Fat Ethel because it's more of a patchwork. It kind of went a little...
I agree.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's the same film, but with new video segments. It's kind of amazing.
Well, I hope to. We're talking with Nick on re-releasing some of these. I want to put them out as a set.
Wow.
Criminally Insane, Criminally Insane 2. Death Nurse and Death Nurse 2.
Oh, yeah.
Because I really think the fans would love it.
Sure, why not?
But in the meantime, iTunes.
Yes.
If you're a fan of all this cyber shit, if you're into this cyber talk.
If you like watching movies on a 3-inch screen, this
please.
Is for you.
Yeah, alternativecinema.com. On the right-hand side, there's a click-through that takes you to the iTunes section.
Well, it's actually a podcast. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're right.
What else
it's on the right blog.
What else is available on iTunes?
Feeding the Masses is available.
Mm-hmm. Richard Griffin.
Richard Griffin. Slime City.
Slime City.
That movie's been around forever.
Yes.
Since what, 19? When did you acquire this
movie? Actually, it's on my list to talk about because it's being re-released on DVD.
Oh, my God.
What do you mean? When you say it's been around forever, what do you
mean?
It's
been around forever.
What does that mean?
It's like the 90s. I remember it was one of the first releases you had, wasn't it?
Is probably one of the earlier releases we acquired to put out originally on VHS.
Whoa.
And at the time, it was one of the VHS.
VHS, I'm what's that?
I'm looking at Ed because he would appreciate this. Mm. It was in a sleeve. It was a gatefold VHS sleeve.
Oh, nice, nice, yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you've been pushing this movie forever.
Slime City has always gotten the sort of deluxe red carpet treatment.
Hmm. Why? Is it that good?
I think it's a very good film. It's a fun film, and it's a representation, for me at least, of the last gasp of late 80s of when a filmmaker, Greg Lamberson, made a movie, he shot the movie on film, and then had to prepare a print to actually deliver to his distributor, and it played like, I don't know exactly if it played here, but it seems like... Like the 8th Street Playhouse?
Or might have been. Might
remember
been,
the various downtown...
I mean, he's from upstate. I have a friend who's friends with him upstate New York.
Actually projected, this movie.
Slime
theaters.
City was actually projected in theaters. Midnight shows, perhaps.
Probably, yeah.
Those opportunities were gone.
I think it's fascinating that a film like Slime City, which was a film that was a theatrical film and truly independent, is now available on a forum like iTunes.
It's really made the transition from
yes, it is.
Projection to download.
Yes.
That's like starring on Broadway and television and the movies.
Yes.
It's the trifecta.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I hope that Greg, I know I am proud. I hope Greg is proud that, you know, we're continuing.
He should, because you don't push any of the movies I did.
Oh, John gets
the, here we go. Here's the dirt here's we needed.
Here's,
it's going to come
the
from
angry
John,
podcast.
Not
podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. Wait, why don't we have just angry podcasts slip in and
there
out of the
John
game?
John and I have been working together at least 20 years,
holy
and
shit.
We haven't gotten to a big fight in a long time.
No.
John and I get into these fights where we just don't talk to each other for like 6 months to a year.
Oh, boy.
Great.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then the makeup sex is awesome.
Oh, wow.
I think we're over all that.
Wow.
All right. Well, you never know.
There might be another.
But John.
You never know. It all has to do with creative passion.
But John has experienced firsthand. And being treated poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if that really is true. You're a sexy American Idol?
It, not in your mind. You don't think it's true. But in my head, I think
do you feel that like, were you satisfied with that? Like, nothing to do with the way it was cut.
No.
Like, just, did you feel it really got any attention?
Did the movie got
yeah.
any attention? No, it got no attention. Maybe rightly so. I don't know.
Maybe on iTunes someday, though.
Oh, if only.
There you go.
Great. Yeah. Well.
But, so even though iTunes, various titles, AC titles on iTunes is old news,
mm-hmm.
maybe by the time this podcast is listened to, if it's after June 09, we're going to continue to have new titles
right.
appear on iTunes. So please check it out if you're into the iTunes thing. If you're into a widescreen TV, please buy the DVD.
Buy the DVD. Well, wait. Well, just to finish up, Suburban Nightmare is also.
Suburban Nightmare.
Available.
John Keyes.
Yes.
He also did American Nightmare.
Oh, right, right.
And Suburban Nightmare.
Suburban Nightmare is pretty good, I gotta say.
You saw it?
Yes.
You did?
It was shot in Texas, right?
You know, Ed, John doesn't watch too many of our movies, so I'm actually shocked here. Now, why
wow.
is it that you saw Suburban Nightmare?
Weren't they shooting this the same time we were doing Spider-Babe or something?
Yes.
So, yeah, I think that's what piqued my interest, to be like, oh, what's so important going down in Texas? Then I saw a promo or a trailer for it that you guys were cutting, that Brian was cutting, and I'm like, oh, this doesn't look too bad. And it wasn't, I gotta say. It's pretty good. And I'm not a big fan of these movies, so.
Right.
Not that I'm a big fan, it's just I don't watch a lot of anything.
Right.
I watch, like, Aqua Teen Hunger Force and.
That's cool, I like.
And Dexter. That's all I'm watching.
Oh, boy.
More old news. Very sad to report that. Both Carter Stevens and Joe Sarno's DP,
mm-hmm.
director of photography, Bruce Sparks, who shot Inga
oh.
and shot Punk Rock
yeah.
and many, many other films, has passed away.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Yes.
How old was he?
I don't know how old he was, but we had the pleasure of interviewing him in 2004 at the Lake Placid Film Festival, mm. where they were doing a Joe Sarno retrospect, and it was a screening of Inga and Suburban Secrets. Do you have any bites?
Sure. On Inga? You want that one first?
What else you got?
On Shooting with Sarno.
Let's hear Bruce Sparks on Inga.
Okay.
I don't know if I really considered them sexy films or sex films. I mean, we all know, you know, look at these films, they're not that explicit. I mean, I've seen more explicit things at 10 o'clock at night on television now. I mean, you could show these films to the Girl Scouts, practically, compared to what's on television now.
Show them to the Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
You know, films...
I think they should show them to the Girl Scouts. I agree.
Films
yes.
like Inga and some of Joe Sarno's black and white films were considered so shocking back in the 60s.
Yeah.
And I think what Bruce was saying is, like, you know...
Comparatively, it was tame.
Right. They are kinky, though. There is still an edge to Joe's work, which we'll return to later when we're talking about his comedies.
It's really the subject matter that's kinky,
yeah,
not really what's happening on the screen.
No, they're not explicit
right.
at all. Yeah.
Yeah,
they're not explicit at all.
What does Bruce say about
Shooting with Sarno?
Yeah.
Let's listen.
It was like a learning process for all of us, and I would say to my camera assistant, let's try this. Don't tell anybody, but we're going to do this, right? Because I want to see what it looks like when it comes out of the lab. And so... We were like working and learning at the same time and experimenting. But we were really reaching for a lot of things, and we learned a lot from doing it, too. We always solved the problems in terms of the dramatic intent of the script. I'd say to Joe, you can't do that because the camera won't do this or the lens won't carry that way. What would you like to do? What do you want the scene to feel like? What do you want it to look like? What do you want to come out of this? I had a problem. I'd say, this is my problem. This is what I want to do. Does anybody have a better idea?
Seems like that Bruce was a practical DP.
Sure, absolutely.
A guy who you want to be on your set because he'll get what you want as a director and also make suggestions in an improv kind of way.
Well, that's what a DP, a good DP, should be able to bridge the technical and creative gap with the director, who's probably not so technical. The director just says, I want this. And the DP's then got to figure out how to do that technically. You know, how to incorporate the creative aspect right. into the technical aspect. And it sounded like he bridged that gap very well.
So he shot the famous wonderful scene where she's on the bed backwards masturbating. There's a wonderful, very obscure, we don't really see where her hand's going, I believe, but we see her leaning back in the bed, which is quite nice.
I would think so.
Wow.
And that was the 60s. So by the time that Bruce was working with Carter, that was, you know, a decade later.
It was much more harder.
It was harder, yes. And
but still not hardcore.
No, hardcore.
Oh, well, yeah. Punk is hard. Yeah, we have the guys, the one you have, I say we, my God, that you have is the R-rated, but there is a filthy version of that.
There will be a filthy version coming out.
Oh, you have the filthy.
Blah, 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 blah. Bruce shot both, and on Punk Rock, Bruce actually uses his name.
Oh, really?
Bruce, wow. Bruce Sparks. Carter Stevens says that he learned more from Bruce Sparks than he learned in any film school or class or... Mm. So
that's good. High praise for Bruce.
Bruce Sparks, it was a pleasure, you know, meeting you, and we're going to miss you.
He can't hear you, Mike.
Oh.
But I'm sure his family will be very grateful.
No relation to the porn star PJ Sparks, right? Isn't there a porn star PJ Sparks? Because she's with two
his
exes.
His daughter.
Oh, there you go.
Did he work on any other stuff that you know of?
Tons.
Or? Oh, really?
Tons. More old news, which I don't even think is news, but I'm going to slip it in the section anyway.
Slip
is the fact
it in.
That. Their new news is news. Their new Misty Monday T-shirts available.
Oh,
what?
Hey!
Called Misty Monday Cheeky Tees.
Let's look at
cheeky
these
cheeky tees.
Yes.
What do they look like? Why do you call them cheeky?
I'll see why. Can you see them there?
Are they on the home page?
Yeah, home page.
Let's see. Cheeky tees. Oh, because she's showing her cheekies.
That's right. And we don't
only
mean her face.
$12.
Yeah, they're very inexpensive.
Oh wow. Hey.
Yeah.
You don't have like a big picture of it?
Yeah.
Where does it say? Oh, click to enlarge.
Stoops.
Oh, it's enlarged. So beautiful. It's nice. Do you see that, Ed? It's very, it's a nod back to the old
pin-up.
Lingerie pin-up days.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where did this picture come from?
Mike James, photographer Mike James, shot Misty.
Is this a new one or an old photo?
It's an older photo, part of his sort of pin-up collection.
Nice.
Rumor has it, speaking of Misty Monday, that she is in Canada shooting a movie that will appear on Cinemax.
Really?
And do you know why rumor has it?
Why does rumor have it?
Hold on, let me put my sleuth hat on.
Sleuth. And your bubble pipe.
Well, here are all the clues. The clues are as follows.
One.
It was known fact that Misty Monday went to Canada to work on a production.
Okay.
Two. A producer called our studio from Canada looking for Misty Monday, and he claimed to be shooting a film for Cinemax.
Three, eh?
Okay.
I went to the intranet. I went to that internet, and I used the Google search. I typed in... Oh, no. I went to some forum site. It mentioned a new Cinemax series called Lingerie. And I said, oh!
Wow.
I said, whoa, I have all these clues. So I did the Google on the lingerie, and up came this. I think, John, do you have some copy there?
Oh, yes.
What is it?
Acton Cinemax TV series lingerie. It says producer Bill Burke and Melissa Kaysen are looking for actors for a new non-union television series, Lingerie, okay, that will air on Cinemax and TMN. What's that, TMN?
I believe it's a Canadian station, but I'm not sure.
All, eh? Lead roles will pay $2,000 to $2,500 a week. Whoa. Auditioning mid-February till beginning of March. Was that the same time frame you heard these rumors?
I think so, yes. So,
my God.
So I think we pretty much concluded that, although we haven't confirmed, that Misty Monday, or Erin Brown, is in this series. But we don't know, is she the star of this series? Or does she have a...
Is it an ensemble?
Yeah, is it an ensemble? Or is it just like a walk-on?
Walk off.
And how much lingerie will be involved in the program?
That, yes. And is she in one episode? or continuing episodes. Because when I think of HBO-produced series, I think right. Entourage,
right.
in which Julian Wells
right.
was in two different episodes, mm. playing two different characters
really?
As a walk-on,
oh.
not as a character.
Mm.
So,
well, she was a fuck-on, really, because she's having sex with the guy, wasn't she?
You're not getting any more emails from her.
No. Well, wasn't she?
A fuck-on?
Well, she was banging the lead guy.
I was a fan of the series, so in one scene,
she's banging the lead guy. Yeah.
And in the second...
I should say bang on. I shouldn't say fuck on. She doesn't deserve that.
On the second... Very lovely woman. On the second show I saw her on, not connected, different character, and she was a cocktail waitress.
Mm. Didn't see that one.
Oh, okay.
She's fetching no matter what she does.
Lovely.
Delicious.
So if anyone has any information on lingerie, please do send your...
yeah, that's a question.
Send your comments to customer service at alternativecinema.com.
Customer service. Hey, I have a question about lingerie.
Yes?
Why is it pronounced lingerie when it clearly says lingerie?
That's an Ed question.
Mr. Syntax.
The French. I don't know Le Français. I guess it's the pronunciation.
French. Lingerie. And I just want to say that if you want to see Julian Wells really act very, very funny, she's Get American Idol.
Sexy American Idol.
Yeah. Thank you, Ed. I don't even know the name of my own fucking movie. Yeah.
Who directed that, John?
Some jerk. Same jerk that directed Titanic.
She was quite good in a lot of your productions.
She's funny. She's a very talented woman. Funny, sexy.
Hot tail.
So, you know about Christian Wright's Righteous Rants?
Yeah.
It's a column that appeared in our print magazine, which, by the way, and I'm not, this is not a joke, because many things we promote, people go to the site and they can't find it.
Oh, nice.
No. The back issues of Alternative Cinema are now available on alternativecinema.com.
Electronically, or you can buy the real things?
The real thing. You can hold it in your
hand. Wow.
Does anybody care?
Two, three guys, maybe.
Two, three guys.
True. That's true.
Maybe.
We cater to a few, but those few really care. Christian Wright's Righteous Rant.
Where is that?
Rant? 09? Rant?
I don't think I have it.
Come on, you have it.
Oh, okay. 2009. Okay. Are we ready for Christian Wright's Righteous Rant?
Yeah.
I have often heard people claim, after watching a movie that they haven't seen in a while, that the movie hasn't aged well. There is credibility to that, though the movie hasn't really aged. It's the same movie it was 20 or 30 years ago, but you're now seeing it through different eyes. So really, you have changed. Regardless, I know what people mean when they say this. A good example is Weird Science. I remember thinking this John Hughes classic was a funny, bizarre, lively movie when I was 15, but when I recently watched it for the first time in well over 15 years, I found it to be a brutally unfunny, stupid, boring, sloppily made piece of 80s crap, with only a handful of laugh-out-loud moments still intact, provided almost exclusively by Bill Paxton. And before you retort with, "Well, you could say that about any 80s comedy," I have also recently rewatched 16 Candles, Back to School, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and Rock and Roll High School. They all hold up. So I can understand this sort of criticism, but as I already said, I'm viewing the same thing through eyes that have changed over the years. Now this brings me to something that never ceases to grind my nerves, and that is the phenomenon of holding up a movie that is decades old to contemporary standards. A teenage cousin of mine recently told me he had watched Jaws for the first time, and every time the shark appeared on screen, he laughed. When I asked why, he responded that it looked so fake. Now, I'll admit that there are moments in Jaws when the seams of the mechanical shark do show. For me, however, that doesn't stop it from being one of the scariest movie monsters of all time. The scene in which Robert Shaw slides down the dock of the boat into the shark's snapping jaws is more horrifying and nightmarish than anything in Cannibal Holocaust or The Exorcist. After some prying, my cousin finally told me he thought the shark should have been done with CGI. When I told him that CGI didn't exist in 1975, he said something to the effect of, "Well, that's why movies are so much better these days." CGI, how I have grown to despise those letters. Don't get me wrong, I've seen some amazing special effects in the last 10-odd years. The dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, the alien insects in Starship Troopers, they were astonishing. But that was during the early days of computer animation when CGI artists weren't sure if the audience would accept it. They therefore busted their asses to get it right and make it look as realistic as possible. Then two things happened. Audiences did accept it, and their attention span dropped by several hundred percent. Due to video games, the availability of several hundred channels on TV, the inundation of portable media in today's society, people, not just kids, cannot sit still for 2 hours unless they are being bombarded with eye candy. And they've been conditioned to believe that the blatantly synthetic imagery that is assaulting their retinas is somehow superior to visual effects created 20, 30, 100 years ago. Are today's special effects superior? Absolutely not. The technology is advanced, the effects are slicker, but they aren't any more realistic than those being produced by generations of filmmakers who have come and gone. The effects in Peter Jackson's remake of King Kong were great, but they aren't any more realistic than the effects in the original 1933 version. I enjoyed Jackson's movie, but there was never a single moment when I actually believed I was looking at a real 20-foot-tall gorilla or an authentic dinosaur. It all looked like CGI. All the shots of 1930s New York looked like CGI. It was cool, but it was never convincing, no more so than the still amazing effects from the 1933 version. The scene in which King Kong and the Tyrannosaurus beat the crap out of each other in the 33 version is one of the greatest, most thrilling scenes ever committed to film. No more than 3 or 4 static shots cut together in a reserved manner, letting all the action in the scene speak for itself, instead of trying to spice it up with chaotic camera movement and 100 edits per minute. The updated version of the scene represents everything that is wrong with fantasy cinema in the 21st century. Too big, too loud, too fucking much! Instead of Kong fighting one Tyrannosaurus, he fights 3. Or was it 4? I honestly can't recall. Instead of Ann Darrow watching in horror from a tree, she's tossed around like a rag doll, and at one utterly ridiculous point is hanging from one of the Tyrannosaurus's teeth. Of course, half the fighting has to take place while all the apes, dinosaurs, and humans involved are swinging from vines. There's been an awful lot of swinging from friggin' vines in movies over the last 10 years. You'd have thought they'd do a remake of Tarzan just so they could show him swinging from vines. I'm not saying that I find that jerky model version of Kong to be more real-looking than the computer-created version, but it certainly isn't any less real-looking, and that's my point. When it comes to professional, well-done special effects, they haven't gotten any better. They've just changed. They're more expensive-looking, slicker, and less painstaking to create. I don't necessarily blame kids for not being able to see that. I blame their parents, too busy listening to their iPods and chatting on the internet to bother introducing their kids to anything more than 10 years old. That's the real issue, of course. The resistance toward being introduced to anything older than you is the result of our society's attitude toward anything that isn't current. Most people are only interested in what's new, as opposed to what may be old but new to them. It can't possibly be hip, cool, and trendy if it's from a decade as ancient as the 50s, much less earlier than that. The look of the effects, the fact that it may be in black and white or that unique, saturated look of early Technicolor is a reminder to the viewer that what he or she is watching is old. This wasn't such a problem 30 years ago when there were only a handful of channels on TV and little or no home video. People had to watch whatever was on. They were, for lack of a better word, forced into watching old movies that they may never have bothered with if given the choice. Now, with streaming video, Netflix, and 1,000 cable and satellite channels, you can virtually watch any movie ever made in an instant. Despite that, whether due to apathy or that burning desire to disregard anything we're told we should hold sacred, there's over 100 years of cinema that most kids will never experience. And that is nothing less than tragic.
Wow.
Heavy duty. Whoa. I agree with him about that part. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was weird when he was using John Hughes as the standard for genius, but, you know, hey.
I do agree about black and white. I think black and white is forgotten completely by almost everybody.
Yeah it's not hip. People don't.
Yeah, it's Turner Classic Movies or nothing. There's nothing on Nickelodeon, TV Land, American Movie Class. What's the other one? American Life Network. It's all gone. Yep.
Well, that's the thing. I think people see black and white and immediately think it is old and they don't want to deal
with
it.
It's gone. Yeah, it's gone.
Because how can something old possibly entertain me now when everything is all fast.
I thought he was going to be Christian, though. I thought that was a Christian man. Then when he started going to John Hughes, his name is just Christian. This gentleman.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with Christian.
Oh, okay. It's he was going to claim your movies were
Christian
or
Wright.
Something.
Oh, yeah. It's just a play. His name is Christian Wright.
Oh, okay.
W R I G H T.
Oh, all right. Okay.
I think it's just a play on Christian Wright.
Okay. Right. Okay.
He was also in
which he rails against, I guess.
Yes. And this is the same character that's in Erotic Survivor, Christian Wright.
Oh, okay.
Plays one of the participants.
Well, right.
And the same character that's in your Sexy American Idol.
That's right.
Return to that again.
Did he play Christian Wright in that movie?
No. You don't remember the name of the character?
No. So many joints ago. But, you know, I got to say, it's nice to hear him speak his opinions rather than read them. Because when you read them, you can actually hear the inflections of, you know, where he's coming from. But to hear him say it, I think, is nice.
Well, he didn't end with a fuck you like Al Goldstein used to on Midnight Blue.
Fuck you.
Go, fuck you. I want black and white. You know, something like that. Like emphatic.
That would be classic.
Did Al Goldstein used to do a...
He used to do a fuck you, and he would just state his opinion. He was not as well-spoken as your Christian Wright fellow there. He would usually just say, this bagel made me sick. I hate Tony Roma's ribs. Fuck you, Tony Roma. That kind of thing.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was just anybody.
Are there clips of that on YouTube?
They're on those discs. Some of them are on those discs that they've been put out by, was it Blue Underground? Or whoever put those out,
That's funny. I remember, that you said that, I remember seeing that.
Get bad cameras in the camera district in New York, and he just complained and fuck you, 42nd Street Photo, whatever. He just come up with a merchant and blaspheme them on the air because
that's
he thought it was humor.
Available Now came out actually in May, and somehow we missed it. The Euro Grindhouse double feature, which is I, a Woman Part 2 and The Daughter, I, a Woman Part 3.
Iowa Woman? What is it?
Iowa Woman Part 2.
Iowa?
No, just kidding.
Iowa woman?
I, a woman.
Is that proper English? Iowa woman?
I, a woman.
Well, there was a film. There was a film called I, a Woman.
Right.
I, a woman. I, a woman.
And two sequels were made.
Yeah.
And this is actually the sequels on a double feature.
I, a woman.
Why don't we listen to the clip while you guys grope the packaging?
And look at all the lovely, lovely extras.
There are only two kinds of women in the world, mothers and whores, and you are in the latter category.
I've always been aware that I possess a certain sexual power over you.
Was he ever normal? Why did I marry him? He knew I'd do whatever he asked. And he always photographed me. Nude.
The key to his chest and to his soul.
We live in a sick, degenerate age. We shouldn't have to train our children to take care of the weak and the ignorant and the handicapped. Drop them!
I can't stand the stink. He's covered with it.
The Euro Grindhouse double feature, I, a Woman, Part 2, and The Daughter, I, a Woman, Part 3.
I, a woman. I, a woman. Got some good sound clips I think we can use.
Absolutely.
I, a woman.
Recommend picking it up if you're a fan of that type of cinema.
These are hardcore? No,
they're softcore.
But they sound pretty crazy.
This was an example, I believe, I'm not certain, but I believe these are American films.
Really?
Because they're both presented by the Chevron Corporation.
Really?
Yeah, back in the late...
The Chevron Corporation?
Yeah, back in the late 60s,
oh, shit.
Odd companies would produce films. And they shot it overseas in Denmark, I believe.
Oh, because that director is, I believe, the guy who did the first one, or at least is known.
Yes.
Mac Alberg is the Swedish
Alberg.
Director, right? Yeah.
Yes. Late 60s, the whole concept of an American film being shot overseas, then brought over to play as a foreign film.
Oh, okay. Right.
Inga. Joe Sarno's Inga. Right. It's sexier. It's foreign. It's, you know, it's you know imported. So it's so you can get away with a little bit more in the cinema because it's viewed differently.
Really?
Yeah.
It's pretty tricky.
It is pretty tricky. And that's, I believe, what the, sort of the style of these films are.
The American public duped again.
Well, they're certainly dubbed, that's for sure.
Dubbed?
Yes. Mm,
dubbed again.
Especially like that line.
There are only two kinds of women in the world, mothers and whores, and you are in the latter category.
Oh, yeah. That guy is awesome.
Yeah.
What's his name?
I don't know.
Werner Schnitzel?
I don't know. He plays a Nazi, though.
He plays it well. He's my favorite Nazi right now.
Really? On the second, it's now June, Carter Stevens Grindhouse double feature. We've spoke about this before. Punk Rock.
Yes.
And Pleasure Palace.
Yes, we did. We spoke about this last month.
Yes, we did.
New from Carter Stevens. Punk Rock.
But I have a few sound bites from Carter Stevens himself.
Oh, let's hear. On Deborah Harry or on Pleasure Palace?
Well, in Punk Rock is the feature the band The Stilettos playing at... Max's Kansas City. As you said, Ed, last time, the Stilettos was a band that had Debbie Harry in it. Let's see what Carter says about it.
Okay.
Originally, when I did the pre-production, one of the people I talked to, and we pretty much had lined up, we had a band called the Stilettos. And the lead singer of the Stilettos at that time was a woman named Debbie Harry. Unfortunately, it took me a couple of months to put the film together. By the time I put the film together, Debbie Harry had left the group.
So by the time Carter got to shot his movie and the Stilettos were signed to be in his movie, no Debbie Harry.
No Debbie. But she leaves with Chris Stein to form Blondie.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But of course, back then, she left the group. I guess no one, he couldn't have anticipated that the next year she would explode as zombie. She would explode on the scene as Blondie.
Once I had love, and it was a gas.
But that would have been an awesome artifact if indeed Debbie Harry was in Punk Rock.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a real coup.
No offense to Elda and the Stilettos. I mean,
Elda's
fabulous.
Still around, according to a friend of mine. She
Elda
still
Huda?
Makes the scene downtown. Yeah, she's still
in New York.
Yeah,
and you're involved, Ed, with the New York scene.
Well,
yes,
sort of. I mean, I couldn't say I'd go back to this era. This era is like the golden, golden days 30 years ago. So, but I've heard that Elda still makes appearances around, you know, around and about.
Is her lipstick all like messed up and stuff?
Wearing like spiky haircut, the
pink
whole thing.
Wigs.
The second feature on this disc is another Carter film called Pleasure Palace.
Mm.
What does Carter say about Pleasure Palace?
Well, when I was working on Pleasure Palace. No, wait, here it is.
It's an interesting film because it got rave reviews everywhere, and no one ever noticed that the last 20 minutes of the film has no sex in it. It's a real film.
I think what Carter's saying is the fact that Carter makes films as a filmmaker, not as a pornographer. So the way he paced Pleasure Palace... And this was a film that played R-rated in Canada. That's the cut we have for this release. But we also possess an X-rated cut, which will be out later in the year.
Naughty.
But in the X-rated cut, what he's saying is that the audiences didn't walk out. They didn't notice that these huge gaps of time would go by in the film with no sex.
Wow.
Because they were watching the movie. And I think that's quite an accomplishment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is this hardcore?
Well, on the current release, which is the – what is it called, John?
The Eurotrash?
No. Stop.
Carter's
Grindhouse.
I can't find it.
It's that one.
Here it is.
That's that one.
Punk Rock plus Pleasure Palace.
Grindhouse double feature.
This is the R-rated versions. It's out now on Secret Key Motion Pictures. And pick it up. I should say, you know, on the AAC.com, alternativecinema.com, on the left-hand side is a little button. It's a little line listing. It says sale items. So anything we're talking about on the podcast, if it's like during the month of June, check it out. Because
on
I think sale. That a lot of our DVDs are available at a very reasonable price. Because, of course... I recommend that people buy our DVDs.
Buy our DVDs!
You have no vested interest in this.
No,
none whatsoever.
Well, you just don't want them to steal it off the internet because some schnook in Scandinavia.
Pirate Bay.
Pirate fuck. Just put it up
on,
there.
Also on June 2nd is the Honeymoon Suite Grindhouse triple feature.
Mm.
This title was not available at press time. For Ed to have.
Okay.
But this is a Sean Costello collection of one-day wonders. Sean Costello is the director of Forced Entry. Right. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that, no.
And another underground film called Water Power.
Which I've heard quite a lot about. That's one of Quentin Tarantino's faves.
Really? Whose faves?
Quentin Tarantino. It says on the internet that he enjoyed that. It's the pornographic Taxi Driver?
Yes.
It's the enema version of Taxi Driver.
It's the Taxi Driver starring Jamie Gillis.
Was that a one-day wonder too or no?
I don't know. It wouldn't shock me.
Shocking!
But the Sean Costello, this collection of Sean Costello one-day wonders has Honeymoon Suite, Come and Be Purified, and Joe Rock Superstar.
That's a crazy one.
This is a film, Joe Rock Superstar, about a rock group that plays at Madison Square Garden, supposedly.
Yes.
And it's Mark Stevens and Jamie Gillis and Sean Costello.
Yeah.
And who else?
No, that's it, three guys in the band.
Oh, three guys in the band. And they go on stage in the film. And as an announcer, hey, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, in the movie, they call him Joe Cock.
Right.
They couldn't release it as Joe Cox, you know.
So it's Joe Rock.
Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Rock. And he's supposed to be this Jim Morrison kind of legend.
It's and Mark Stevens with eyeliner.
Yes, Mark Stevens in leather pants. He comes on stage, and the movie's playing. And what do they play? What do they lip sync to?
What?
L.A. Woman, The Doors.
Wow. He got to clear that? He got to actually – did he?
No.
Or did he not clear it?
What clearance?
Okay.
No such thing.
The amazing thing about these films in the 1970s and probably why fans do like bootlegs as opposed to our releases,
yes,
which we have to clean up and take out The Doors music and replace it.
Have you taken it out of this version?
Yeah.
Yes. We put in Lick It Woman.
Oh.
What's it called?
Lick It Woman, yeah.
Can you play just a few bars?
Okay.
The Doors.
Sounds just like Jim Morrison.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Really? Who made that music, John?
I don't know.
Okay.
John. Yeah. Yeah, that was like an hour it took us to do that
version. And that's good because it almost sounds like it, but you got the beat off so that this way there's no copyright. Like you have to get
That's the way you got to work
two chords away from the original.
I think the guitar player changed the progression just enough to make it our own.
But I think, Ed, I think you can appreciate the quirkiness, the oddity, the strangeness that this film was made in a day, edited together probably by Sean Costello, and then just like... tracks just slammed on it from The Doors and then right to the theater.
Because you figure you'd never get caught. They wouldn't get caught, yeah.
Yeah, because they never thought about, you know, distributing it on DVD or VHS. Right, right. It was just like, shoot it and get it out the door.
Wow.
It was the wild, wild west. Crazy. Yeah. I guess no thought of intellectual... I guess you'd be laughed at.
Yeah.
Intellectual... I mean, this is not the first film that... We at After Hours Cinema have come across copyrighted music.
Oh, no, they all do.
John, John works in our editing department. John sees a lot of...
They all do, yeah. It's indiscriminate.
Crosby, Stills, Nash.
Crosby, Stills, Nash. Jackie Gleason music. Just a lot of, like, elevator music. Wow. And a lot of classical music.
Right.
Oddly enough.
I'm happy that fans seem genuinely understanding that our releases have new tracks.
Yeah.
Because we just, can't do it.
Well, because I got to say, there's just, because it would cost too much money. But there's something charming about seeing it with the original music.
And, oh, my gosh.
You know, the bits of dialogue that can't be salvaged because the music is playing over it sometimes. It's pretty funny.
Do you have a promo for this?
I think I do. What's it called?
Honeymoon Suite.
Oh, Honeymoon Suite.
From famed 70s porno director Sean Costello, and After Hours Cinema comes three classic porno films worthy of their cult status, neatly packaged together for the very first time.
It's a nice feeling.
Yeah, it is a nice feeling.
Joe Rock Superstar follows the rise and fall.
You're Joe Cock, you know. You can't get it up here. What's going to happen when you get out there? You just tell me. What's going to happen when you get it out there?
And rise again of a rock-hard hard rocker as he and his band bang their way through a bevy of beautiful groupies.
My dream is coming true!
Starring the legendary Mark Stevens as Joe Cock.
Keep sucking it, Mother.
And the always outrageous Ultramax.
I haven't had a piece of ass since your father got caught in the meat grinder.
Next, it's Honeymoon Suite. What happens when six cats and chicks all marry each other?
With this ring, I be wed.
More banging, blowing, threesomes, foursomes, rug munching, and anal sex than any marriage we know of. Lastly,
come and be purified.
Stars New York porn legend Jamie Gillis as a horny priest who explores the sexy side of religion for fun.
My children, it's time to fuck.
And profit.
This was our best idea yet. I don't give him any idea that they were on film.
Watch as he and his cohorts sanctify the willing and save a few souls for themselves. If you like it down and dirty, hard rocking, and rough around the edges, then these films are definitely for you. After Hours Cinemas, the Sean Costello Collection.
My beautiful son.
Suck it, Mom.
These films are no less than shocking.
It's very beautiful.
They're pretty out there as far as the sex and the content.
And it's almost like but there's a certain smartness about the content from the perspective of it's – how would you describe Sean Costello as like – it's black comedy, right?
Yeah, it definitely is. There's humor in it. I mean, I think they're all tongue-in-cheek. Nothing's meant to be serious. It's just, you know, fucking movies. The whole stories are centered around sex.
But Sean Costello could have just shot a fuck film.
Yeah, it wouldn't be this.
You've seen some of the West Coast
– yeah.
John, you've seen a few West Coast films that are soulless.
Right, definitely.
So there seems to be a humor injected into a Sean Costello film that sets it apart.
Definitely. They're fun to watch, I got to say. I really enjoyed watching these movies and working on them.
The film Come and Be Purified, I saw it in the transfer process. I mean, there's an inside joke going on.
Yeah.
Do you see like the actors are standing there and like could barely contain their laughter?
Yeah, Jamie Gillis. Yeah, everybody is. And people do crack up during some scenes.
Yeah.
It's funny.
It's like being on it. It's like being in on the inside joke.
Right.
Hmm.
If you look at it from, I guess, from a filmmaking perspective, Ed,
I have not seen Sean Costello.
Oh, you got to see. They're great movies. They're really fun to watch, I got to say.
If that's your thing.
Yes.
Even if it's not your thing, because it ain't my thing, and I enjoyed watching them.
Ed, do you steer away from – I mean, if this is a personal question.
No, I just haven't seen
it. I mean, did you steer away from
– Forced Entry, and I was like, okay, the rape movie, I think I'm going to put that on the pile, but I'm not going to immediately – you know, like I might be a little softer.
If the content is hardcore, is it less
– I will watch hardcore, but it's like you can generally kind of sift through some of the actual sex because it does become quite tiresome.
These movies actually remind me of some of the earlier seduction cinema movies because there's goofy scenarios wrapped around, you know, the – what people, I guess, why these movies were made was the sex. So,
right.
But they had fun with it. It wasn't just like, you know, people banging for no good reason.
Right.
You know, it wasn't well thought out, but it was thought out enough to be enjoyable.
Well, it was shot in one day, so I guess only so much could be thought out.
Right.
And I'm sure there's not room for second takes.
No.
Yeah.
There are a lot of mistakes that I guess if someone had the opportunity to do a second take, they would. But of course, you know.
So the Honeymoon Suite Grindhouse triple feature gets at least two thumbs up from the group.
Yes. One thumb waiting to be up.
Yes.
If you're a fan.
Oh, that's scary.
If you're a fan of the New York scene, early 70s, that whole grungy 16mm scene, this movie is a must see.
If you're a fan of seeing girls' feet in the air and the dirt on the bottom of their feet.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's every film. I'm never not amazed at seeing the dirt on the bottom of people's feet.
And there are a lot of faces in this. Georgina Spelvin, who was Devil and Miss Jones, is in it.
Mark Stevens is all over it. Jamie Gillis. And
Ultra Max.
Yeah, she's funny as hell. Well, you heard some of her dialogue in the clip, so.
Yeah.
She's outrageous. She is outrageous.
Yeah. Outrageous.
Outrageous.
Yes.
Incest between Mark Stevens and Ultra Max is great. I mean, all the dialogue in there is hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, suck it, Mom. Come on. When was the last time you said that?
Oh, suck it, Mom.
Oh, wait a minute, sorry.
Gratuitous shower scenes, lingerie-ripping catfights, and scantily clad sweaty women making out in the jungle. It's the Women in Prison triple feature from Shockorama Cinema. Three of the most depraved and shocking women in prison films you've never seen. Desperate female prisoners are trapped in a remote jungle camp. But the horrors of lockup are nothing compared to what awaits them outside of the prison. In Escape from Hell. Four beautiful Americans are swept up in a brutal tropical revolution. And using their bodies may be the only way of escape in the Hot Box. Drug smuggling, car chases, catfights and inappropriate relations. The incarceration essentials.
Oh, back in the sack, you rotten lesbo. I mean, do you have to be so noisy about it?
Women in Cell Block 7. The guns are hot and their bodies are hard. It's the Women in Prison triple feature, available on DVD.
I'm not an expert in WIP, which is WIP, which is Women in Prison films.
Right. I haven't seen one.
I am a real advocate and devotee, and I took exception to the collector saying they make you less virile if you see too many of them. And he says in the notes, I wouldn't see too many of these. They'd make me less virile. I think I'm still straight, and I don't know. I'm a big fan of the women's
you are.
Women in prison genre, yes.
Really?
I had seen already one or out of these three before from its VHS incarnation, the Escape from Cell Block.
You've only seen one of these.
One of them, and I watched a Hot Box last night. I still haven't seen Escape from Hell.
Hot Box.
Yes, it's pretty
awesome.
Amazing.
What is enticing, what interests you about women in prison films?
Well, they're sleazy as hell. I could get into the Freudian ramifications. I don't want to get too highfalutin on you. They're incredibly sleazy, incredibly sexy, and they're women in a small, confined environment. You know, usually some of them, they're dominated by men. Most of them, it's just female-female, you know, interactions, so to speak.
Right.
Sex, fights, everything, you know, that kind of thing. It's very basic primal
cinema. The dirty side of women.
Yes.
Right.
It's also a fantasy prison, obviously, too, because a real women's prison we see at night on those cable documentaries.
No orange jumpsuits.
Yeah,
here.
And they're really scary ladies. These are the, obviously, sexed up models who are doing this kind of thing.
Right. That's the prison I want to go to, by the way.
Yes, exactly. The prison of the male mind is basically what it is.
Ah, interesting.
Mind. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Wow, cool.
You know. Babes behind bars.
I'm asking because this package is a pickup for us as opposed to us producing it in-house.
Oh, of course.
So this is a good package?
It's an interesting package. It's three films that had been out on VHS, obviously, but the Italian ones are very depressing. The Italian ones always have this kind of dark cast to them, whereas the Jonathan Demme one, we should note that Jonathan Demme wrote and produced The Hot Box.
Really?
It was an amazing 1972 film.
Really?
Jonathan Demme's second effort, according to the IMDb, unless he did other things for Corman. That's a Corman sort of produced movie. It's a New World movie. And that's really a Nurses in Jeopardy, as the collector does note in the notes. That's a Nurses in Jeopardy film more than a women's prison film.
That's
but
good.
They're on the run in the jungle, so it's kind of Filipino.
As good or better than Silence of the Lambs?
Silence of the Lambs. I would actually say Caged Heat, his later one, which you don't have the rights to. But that one, I would say, is one of his best films ever, along with Silence of the Lambs.
Nice.
His later film. Actually, it's noted by in the notes that this has a kind of a left-wing bent, which now he has in Philadelphia, Beloved, Rachel Getting Married, the kind of soft, nicer, cuter Jonathan Demme. I really like the exploitation Jonathan Demme. I think he was kick-ass. I think it's kind of interesting stuff.
Mm. Encouraging.
Yes.
Yes.
There you go.
And we have a nice package, John.
Oh, I have a nice package, yes.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, there's a great package. We haven't opened it yet, but I'm sure it's jam-packed.
It's packages. Beautiful. Okay. It's a beautiful package.
Jam-packed.
Now we're going to talk about Deep Throat Part 2.
Yes.
An amazing collection.
Yes.
And as for myself, who has been restoring the films of Joe Sarno now for at least 10 years, I've always wanted to put this film out. And when we acquired Touch of Genie, I sought out to find the three Joe Sarno comedies, because Joe Sarno is not really associated with comedy. People think of Joe Sarno as a serious, erotic filmmaker. Handles sex very seriously. But in the year 1974, for whatever reason, Joe shot three comedies. Deep Throat Part 2, amazing in itself because Deep Throat is like a cultural icon. The name, the film,
right.
Linda Lovelace, it's big.
Right. So, it's a landmark. It's a landmark in movie history. Film. Not just porno history, but movie history.
Yeah. Jam-packed with stars, too.
Jam-packed.
Yes.
It is. Mark Stevens.
Yeah.
Is there? I see Harry Reams.
Yeah.
Jam-packed.
Jam-packed.
So we have Deep Throat 2, a very little-known lost film called The Switch, which is actually Joe's comedic take on Jekyll Hyde, Nutty Professor.
Right.
And Touch of Genie. Which is seeing an R-rated release now because we did put it out in an adult format.
One.
This version did screen at the Pioneer Theater in, I want to say, 06. And John, you were there, and
yes,
Ed, you were there.
Yeah, it was a great event.
Yeah, and some of the footage we shot that night are actually on the DVD.
The interviews?
The interviews, the event, yeah. Delicious pizza from the...
with the now-defunct Pioneer
Theater.
We should say goodbye to the Pioneer Theater.
That's gone?
Yeah, that theater closed down. They still have the pizzeria. They closed the movie theater and the radio store.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Quick plug, sure. Two Boots Pizza now open on 9th Avenue, on like 9th and 44th.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go there.
More uptown.
Yes. I'm thrilled at this collection. It's just an amazing collection for me. I'm so thrilled I can't even talk about it. You guys talk about it, the collections.
I would say the interesting thing about Touch of Genie, which I found fascinating, he shot in New York. I think all three are shot in New York. I'm not certain. But the location, what is it, Hell's Kitchen, the shots he's got of these obscure streets. This is not the Times Square we all know that we were talking about in reference to the Carter Stevens movies. This is these obscure little blocks in Hell's Kitchen where I guess Joe is very familiar with because he's lived at that certain area in New York for a long time. So he's showing you the innards of Times Square that you'd not see in any other movie. It's kind of a Woody Allen Schlemiel movie, I guess you could say.
Yes.
That.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John, you've seen it.
Which?
Touch of Genie.
Yes. Is that with the Shlomo guy?
Yeah.
Who's
the genie? It's Doug Stone. Well,
come on, man.
Yeah, exactly.
That guy?
Doug Stone. Doug Stone.
Oh, Doug
which,
Stone.
Which the star, Doug Stone, we
showed
found
up.
Him, and he came to the premiere.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, of course, his interview is on this DVD.
Right. Fascinating.
Yeah. I think the film works without the hardcore sex. I don't miss the hardcore sex in this film. I think it's a fascinating film, a unique slice of New York cinema and – unique from the perspective that, once again, these are Joe Sarno comedies.
Mm.
So
it's very strange. He actually goes hardcore comedic in Deep Throat 2 with a pie fight at the end, which I have to say, that was the weirdestly paced pie fight I've ever seen. It's very strange. Judy Tenuta's in there, too.
Yes, she is.
Really? Comedian. Judy Tenuta is in the office looking. I don't know if she has a single line.
Does she get hit with a pie?
No, she's earlier than the film. Oh. She's just an office girl who stares out at one point. It's Judy Tenuta, the comedian.
This is a big film. I think that perhaps, I'm just guessing here, that Deep Throat made so much money. If you watch the documentary Inside Deep Throat, I think they talk about how they had so much money that they used to weigh it.
Wow.
I mean, I think they threw a lot of money at this Deep Throat 2 to try to capture the mainstream market.
The weirdest thing for me in watching the film is they never say her Deep Throat, she, you know.
They allude to
our podcast here, but
Linda Lovelace is Nurse Linda in the film.
Right.
She's reprising her character from the first film. Harry Reams is playing the same character.
Right.
Joe Sorno, we have a comment from Joe talking about Deep Throat 1, which, by the way, was a phenomenon because it was this filthy fucking movie. Filthy.
Literally fucking.
That everyone went to see.
Right.
Celebrities.
Johnny Carson.
Yes.
Everybody. Yes.
That Rowan and Martin were doing shtick about Deep Throat. Mm. Bob Hope was doing shtick about Deep Throat. Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
What does Joe say about Deep Throat?
Well, that's fair.
The first time I met Linda Lovelace, we went to the cinema to see Deep Throat. And I sat next to her and Peggy sat on the other side of her. Deep Throat was the first hardcore film that I ever saw. I never believed that there would be films like Deep Throat. I was so shocked when I first saw the Deep Throat deal. My eyes popped open wide. I didn't think anybody could do that. It was the hardest of the hardcore.
The Deep Throat thing, Joe Sarno's talking about, people never, the pornos were around for a long time.
I think Jackie O saw it. At a point, it was like people like the Warhol Jackie O type really refined people were taking
Deep
Throat because it was this event to go to. And it's really not a great porn film. It really is. It's a landmark.
To see the event, which is Linda Lovelace swallowing a penis.
Right.
But But the amazing factor of the Deep Throat propelled the film and then led to, of course, Deep Throat Part 2, which I will sadly say didn't do well.
Yeah, well, he acknowledges that in your supplements, but that it really bombed because people were looking for sex. And I think there was sex in certain markets. There's a book called The Complete Linda Lovelace that says at certain points, I think they were so desperate to market this, they interpolated sex. It wasn't sex Joe had shot. But I read in that Eric Danville book that there were other versions possibly.
Have you read the liners?
No, I haven't read the liners.
This film was shot softcore with softcore sex films scenes shot by Joe that were cut out to get the R.
Oh, and then reinstated for certain markets? Or
Foreign market.
Oh,
but those scenes are still missing.
Oh.
And the film was never shot hardcore.
Oh, okay.
And it is hardcore, I don't think, was ever even inserted. There's a lot of rumors about this film.
Right, right. I mean, that's in that book.
And there's also a film made in the mid-80s called Deep Throat 2.
Right.
That has nothing to do with this film.
Right, right.
So this film was actually buried, forgotten about, almost as if it never existed.
Hmm.
To the point where when, you know, VHS porn took over, they just remade it.
Hmm.
Deep Throat 2 and forgot about this. This is a great... great collection, even from the perspective of Deep Throat 2, because if you notice the music, like a takeoff on like a James Bond.
Right.
Deep Throat.
This is a fascinating film that I think needs to be seen.
Hmm.
A lavish Joe Sarno production.
Hmm.
With pie fights and car chases
Yeah. I like the shtick in A Touch of Genie, though, because that's him. He had noted, I think it's on one of the interviews here, that he was into old Jewish humor, and that is very shticky old Jewish humor, A Touch of Genie, kind of.
What does Joe say on comedy, John?
Let's have a listen.
Comedy comes naturally to me anyway. I think in terms of funny things, but I have to have my sensibilities before I begin writing. I have to say to myself, well, this has got to be funny, right? And then think funny. And I think funny. And that the more outrageous the funny can be, the better it is in on film.
Of course, Linda Lovelace.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She was only in outside of these underground loops that
Linda
she was
Lovelace
in.
Lovelace for president. Yeah.
She was only in one hardcore feature, and that is Deep Throat. And that is.
Right.
Shocking.
Right.
And then if you think about it.
She does two more comedies, this and Linda Lovelace for President with Mickey Dolenz. And that's it. She quits the business completely. Yeah, she wanted to go to Vegas, and then she said this was all rape. So she's never raped in this film. We can say that this is definitely not one of her – she later said that everything she did in pornography was a horrible violation of her human rights, et cetera.
Compared to other performers, Tina Russell and Georgina Spelvin and many others from the 70s who were in – what seems like hundreds of films, Linda Lovelace's hardcore career was short.
It was loops, in this. They get into it in that book that basically it's like eight loops at most and this one film, and that's all she ever did.
She made the follow-ups to Deep Throat were all films aiming for a much bigger,
clean,
mainstream, Linda Lovelace for President.
Yeah, it's a total mainstream comedy.
Have you seen the film?
It was out from that same company that did this one, and it's just, as I say, Mickey Dolenz in the cast. It's just Joey Foreman from Get Smart, those kind of comedians from the 60s. Yeah, it's that kind of people dressed as Chairman Mao, people dressed as Nazis. God. That kind of humor.
What does Joe say about Linda Lovelace?
Well, let's hear.
The first person Chuck Traynor brought Linda to was me after she did his Deep Throat 1. Linda Lovelace, I miss her. She died a few years ago, and she was so laid back that you couldn't believe it, that this was Linda Lovelace that the star of Deep Throat, but she was a lovely young woman and a very good friend. She wasn't an actress at all, but when you directed her and you gave her the essence of what you wanted, she gave you exactly that. Naturally, you would give her only what she was capable of, knowing her. I think people were engaged with the fact that she was so real on camera. She was really sort of a shy little lady. It was hard to imagine her doing the Deep Throat deal.
Well, Linda Lovelace later on came out with a book called Ordeal.
Right, exactly.
And was siding on a feminist side against pornography. And people who knew her say basically that she was a really good person. It kind of latched on and was a chameleon. So a group sort of adapted her and used her as a front, as a voice.
Right.
And in fact, I don't think she really felt that way.
At the end, she was signing at Chiller Theater, and I can go on the record and say this because it was in public. I got to speak to her for a few minutes. She was very sweet, and she was signing I made Linda Lovelace choke T-shirts for $25 to $35. Whoa. So she had obviously rethought her feminist position.
Wasn't she dead?
Yeah. She has now died. She had a sad death in a car wreck. Yeah.
Years
back.
She also – didn't she return to Playboy?
She did what was it, Leg Show? She
Leg
did a
Show.
Thing for with Eric Danville, the gentleman who wrote the complete Linda Lovelace, where he really was trying to get her public attention again the way that Dave Stevens did with Betty Page. And with Linda Lovelace, it was hard because she had gone so stridently feminist with Andrea Dworkin saying, I was raped. Yeah, there was the E! Hollywood True Hollywood Story where they showed the dog loop and then had to take it out later. I had heard about that from
Eric. Oh, is that right?
It was digitized so the dog was disappeared because the dog humps her. And then basically that was pulled because they were like, how did you ever think you could get that on the air? That actually aired in like one time on E. So these are bizarre facts about Linda's life.
Right.
Yeah, her dog loop is rather one of the sadder moments in her career.
Ooh. Was that early?
Before
or
Deep
after?
Throat. She did like, I think he says an eight in the book. It's either a total of six or eight loops that just kept getting. She does one where she's either her foot, she's either fucked by another girl's foot, or she uses her foot to fuck another girl.
Shocking.
They were not exactly high-class porn.
Aren't your average.
They were not your Joe
sex.
Sarno, Radley Metzger, you know,
shocking.
Porno chic. Yeah, they're just sad. They're just sad. They're made in hotel rooms in Florida.
Shocking.
What's it like to have all this information at your fingertips? I'm fascinated. I'm sitting here watching you. I'm like, wow, this guy knows so much stuff.
This is
awesome.
Gets me a nickel.
I don't know that much information about anything. Not even myself.
I've taken it from a guy's book. I credited the book.
But you retain that information and spew it out like that? That's awesome.
Thank you very much.
It's beautiful. What do we talk about like that? Our moms?
Yes, definitely.
That's about it.
Don't put your mom in the category of Linda Lovelace.
Oh, no. She never did a doggy loop. Or
whoa,
did she?
Whoa, bada-bing.
No.
We're actually going to close our June podcast with a cut from the Deep Throat 2 soundtrack, which was that whole take on – I mean, the soundtrack, by the way, is well produced.
Mm.
Did you hear some of the music in this film?
I haven't watched it.
Anybody famous?
Yeah. Not that I'm aware of.
No, the ABBA guys?
No ABBA guys. But this is very much a James Bond kind of spy kind of tune.
And this has his whole ensemble, Chris Jordan, Eric Edwards, the people and ladies that he used in a lot of those movies.
Deep Throat Sex Comedy Collection. Mm. Really.
And you
lovely,
found these prints, actually.
Disc.
You helped with a different archivist.
Yeah.
So
I'm very proud of it, and I'm thrilled to get out Deep Throat Part 2 nationally through a national distributor. That's I'm very excited about because there have been various versions floating around that I love working with Joe and Peggy and putting out his films and really, really getting behind them. So, and this is probably our 10th, 11th, or 12th Joe Sarno release of his films.
Amazing.
So,
and you've gotten the trilogies too. You did this trilogy, you did his German trilogy. You tend to, with Michael Bowen's help, I guess, find these movies in their entirety. You find all three of the trilogy, all three of the films.
Yes, indeed.
There's great reproductions of the, what do you call these things?
Press books.
the lobby
theater cards. Lobby cards. Great. With Mark Stevens. Is that, what's his name? Jamie Gillis.
He
looks like Dudley
Moore.
It's
an all-star cast, as you said.
I'm telling you, I know all these people, and I know very little about this stuff. No. Not that well. But yeah, Mark Stevens. I'm a fan of his. I think he's funny.
Yeah. Mark Stevens is in this.
Yeah.
You would enjoy this.
I just might.
I will say this is jam-packed.
Jam-packed.
It is jam-packed.
Jam-packed.
Because there's a commentary as well.
Oh, right.
With one of the actors, Rick Livermore.
Hmm.
He's an amazing amount of features. As a matter of fact, he's in the Honeymoon Suite. The guy who's making fun of. The guy who you mentioned.
Which guy's that?
the guy.
Oh, that guy? Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's
great. A total stoner.
He's in amazing amount of films, and we have a commentary track.
Really?
Yes.
I did not. That's cool.
And I'll give away, midway through the commentary track, which we recorded in a studio in the city, Joe Sarno walks in.
Hey!
Oh, nice.
So it's awesome.
Wow, cool. Very nice.
Totally awesome.
That was like the first time he'd seen that guy?
Yes, first time that he saw Rick Livermore in 30, 35 years.
Wow. Cool.
So,
how's Rick holding up?
Great.
Yeah?
Great.
Good for him.
Tributes to these amazing actors, Doug Stone, Rick Livermore. These are people that probably are unheralded in the little porn anthologies that come out, et cetera.
Even Bruce Sparks.
Yeah.
Unknown.
Yeah, we're discussing people here who are
these people really deserve the attention.
Mm.
And that's what I personally love about working on these movies.
Mm.
And, you know, not to get on a soapbox, but it's not like we're just releasing them. We get underneath them. Like, for example, what I didn't mention – The Honeymoon Suite triple feature Sean Costello, the director, wrote the liner notes.
Oh, right. You had him do the forced entry, too, right?
Yeah, so that's, I think, what makes these releases...
They're complete.
They're complete.
They're not
if
just
the director's
releasing
alive, you
movies.
Find them somewhere.
Yeah.
somebody somewhere is going to be commenting on this if they're still alive.
Yeah.
How's Sean Costello holding up? Is he lucid and clear?
Yes.
He's funny in his movies, I got to say.
He's great.
You could really tell they're having a great time.
Yeah. Our hour-long podcast has swelled into a hour 30-minute podcast.
Holy shit.
Oh, boy. Wow.
And
because you guys are totally geeking out.
Ed has missed his bus.
Oh, yes.
Which we're going to drive him to the bus station.
Yeah, there you go.
But, you know, I hope this is entertaining because it has been a joy to sit here with you guys
thank
and
you.
Kind of talk about
it's,
these releases.
It's great to listen to Ed go
thank
on
you,
at man. Length about all this stuff.
Thank yes.
You. It really helps flesh it out. It's not just like a dirty movie, you know, watching dirty movies. It's like watching – and what these movies are to me are time capsules
totally
of what
are.
Was
yeah,
going
totally,
on
totally.
In the pop culture, in the mainstream or,
yeah.
or the underbelly of it
yeah.
at
see
that time.
Every fashion, every hairdo, every weird – wall hanging, yeah. all these bizarre
yeah,
posters.
It's crazy, yeah. it's crazy, crazy stuff.
As you
it's,
said, the dirty feet and the unwashed bodies, everything. You see all these.
There's a lot to look at from
yeah.
a historical
well,
perspective
is,
of,
sure.
even if you're not interested in what's going on,
yeah.
you look at the furniture.
Well, we were discussing today the first, oh, second film of Jonathan Demme. You're releasing the second film, Jonathan Demme, Mr. Rachel Getting Married, up for Oscars, did a women's sort of women's
right.
prison movie here.
Right.
Nurses in
Great.
Peril in the Philippines, pretending it's a South American country.
It's odd that they would go
history.
And shoot in the Philippines. These films that were shot in the Philippines.
Right, right.
And that seemed to be was that a Corman
that
formula?
Because it had worked with Jack Hill with the Big Dollhouse. So, like, they,
right.
you know, they had, I think the government, like Ireland does in different countries, they give them kind of a subsidy, a break. And Roger Corman has always been a genius in terms of finding countries like, as I said, Ireland or Slavic countries where you pay no taxes
right.
to shoot. And
was there a horror film, a black and white horror film that he shot with some monster in a rubber monster suit?
Well, he had done a lot of those, and he did stuff in Ireland. The Dementia 13, I think, might have even been done there.
Right.
The Coppola. So he was always finding countries where you could shoot overseas, and they would charge you nothing.
Well, I was just going to say to John, why doesn't Seduction Cinema shoot overseas? But we have.
In England. Yes.
Yes. You had English scenes and some of your Bill Hellfire films,
right?
Yeah.
Paris.
Yeah, Werewolf in London.
Was it different in shooting quickly? Was it – because we're going into the second hour – was it different to actually get on a plane to go to England to make a movie?
Yeah, it was great.
Like, was there a different feel to it than just coming to the studio?
No, it's basically the same
but was
process.
It fun that you were in England?
Yeah, well, of course, yeah. We're in a different country, working with different people who are very creatively, you know, tapped into what they're doing. So it was a lot of fun. And they talked funny. So
yes.
it was great.
One of my favorite Seduction Cinema films, SSI.
Is that right?
Rented at Blockbuster. Go figure.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was fun to make. Tom Moose and his crew, great blokes.
But listen, chaps. Tune in next month.
When
we do it all over again. And we're threatening to do a second podcast in the month where it's just us.
Angry shit.
It'll be new old news.
Shit talking.
You'll have new old news each
right.
month, right?
It's like Jen and Brad. Fuck them. That kind of stuff.
Oh, don't get me started on that fucking Benjamin Buttons.
And this octopus.
Oh, my
Benjamin
God.
Button.
Did you see that, Ed?
No, I haven't seen
it.
Oh,
we won't
save it. I'm not into the main series, I've said. I
don't
see
it. Oh, did you see that, Ed?
Oh, I won't save it.
I remember seeing Titanic the first week it opened. And I was sitting in there like,
oh, I'm not into the main series, I've said.
It's still goes to show how weird I am here talking up, you know, Honey Sweet and
Joe Rock Superstar. I'm like...
soulless piece of shit.
Hey, let's check out this cut from Deep Throat Part 2.
Okay.
You guys are going to love it, and we'll see you next time. And send us some mail, for God's sake,
at
customer service at alternativecinema.com.
So
well, we're going to still sit here and talk for all day, but listen to this. We'll see you guys later.
Okay, bye.
Deep Throat, making me feel warm all over. Deep Throat, sending a chill up my spine. Show me the way down under. Feeling the thunder.
Once you made your mind up and you pick your train, you know where to wind up. You always get your way. So let them come to you and do what you must do. Deep must do deep throw.